response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
He spins around looking for it.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing else comes close.
Line and over. He spins around looking for a trailer, dumps it in. Holzinger. Holzinger rolling around. Takes a shot. Sanderson scores!
To be devastating to Montreal. They have played a courageous game here tonight against Buffalo, but Jeff Sanderson with the fresh legs beats the goaltender Andy Moog to win it in game one of this series.
Oh, what a stunning call from RJ and Jim Lorenz as Buffalo opened the last meeting between these two in the postseason, which was 1998, and the Sanderson OT winner led to a Buffalo sweep. Welcome in Pierre LeBrun alongside Marty Baron. It's great to have you here.
We're burying the lead here. Happy birthday, Duffer.
I was going to get to it.
Now, the rundown has two items that I clearly don't want to talk about. Myself, meaning, and the birthday, and the draft lottery. So have at it, guys.
Okay, let's start with, let's get this tweet. Okay, so last week, Duffer, somebody asked a Sabres Twitter. Anyone knows how old Duffer is? Everyone at the watch party is trying to figure it out. Marty, can you help? This is what I answered. It's going to be his birthday next week. Maybe we'll reveal that on Sabres Live.
You want me to?
You're still a young guy.
Do you want me to do it cryptically?
Yes, do it cryptically.
Okay, so prior to defeating Boston and clinching that series, the last time the Sabres won a series against the New York Rangers in 2007, who scored the game winner?
It was the game winner in that game.
And it's his jersey number.
Well, it's not Max. Because you're not 61.
No, and they didn't have a Gretzky either.
They didn't have a Gretzky. Who was in that range? I don't know.
Jochen Hecht.
Okay, so now you got me puzzled.
I was just going to say, now you're on the spot. Wait.
55, baby.
He was 55. Okay, well, that was not so cryptic.
All right.
That's good. Happy 55th.
Thank you.
And we're not talking about the draft lottery.
By the way, you don't look a day over 54 in my head. So.
My goals against is still pretty high, thanks to playing against you all those years.
Oh, my gosh.
People still think that I'm older than you, Duffer, so that's okay. I'll be the old man here. You guys used to be in the fantasy hockey league together, right?
Well, there was nothing fantasy about it, but we played on an outdoor sheet, like old school, in Toronto, years and years ago. Yeah. Scott Burnside was in that league. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we had your fantasy hockey pool, obviously, as well.
I think I picked up your team after you quit the fantasy hockey, the Red Light Racing.
Oh, you did?
So I picked it up, and I quit 2 years later. It was way too hard.
Don't tell people that was the name of my team. I feel bad for Andre Rasico.
That was his nickname. Everybody called him Red Light Racico, but hey, still playing the NHL.
That happens. So real quick, just hockey in general tonight, playoffs, but also lottery last night, as the draft will be here in June. So.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, obviously, I'm based in Toronto, and the Leafs had one of their worst days. I've been in this business 31 years, and that had to be one of the worst 24-hour news cycles in terms of the way that the fan base welcomed the management hires and how that news conference went and how awkward it was, to then the next day winning the lottery. And people are going nuts in Toronto. I mean, it's just they had an 8.5% chance to win it. And again, as people probably know following it, Boston Bruins – we're going to end up with that first round pick if it was anywhere outside the top five, and never mind that. It's nuts. And, you know, a big question mark for the Leafs before we move on to more important things, but is, will Austin Matthews want to stick around?
Right.
And so what does winning the lottery do or not?
That was the last time the draft was in Buffalo. The Leafs had the number one overall pick. They pick Austin Matthews. Now they get the number one overall pick, obviously Gavin McKenna. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Like, It is here now. And the Leafs didn't make the playoffs. That's why they ended up in that position. The Sabres, after 15 years, make the playoffs. It's game one against the Montreal Canadiens. Last time they played in 98, Montreal was swept by Buffalo.
Yep.
The time before that in 93, Montreal swept the Sabres en route to winning the Stanley Cup in 93. You covered the Canadiens, that whole first round against Tampa. What is the number one thing the Sabres and their fans have to watch out for the Canadiens?
Well, I'm not going to say stay out of the box because that's too obvious to me, but obviously Montreal's power play, even when they didn't score, was so dangerous. And you're talking about Tampa having guys like Cirelli and Hagel, maybe the premier penalty-killing duel in the league, and they had their hands full of that Habs power play because all five options are lethal. It's a great power play. But I'm going to go off the board to other with your poll question and say this. Puck management through the neutral zone on zone entries, huge. When Tampa got in trouble is when they tried to do too much and fed Montreal's counter.
Mm-hmm.
That became a real problem for the Lightning halfway through that series. And so the Lightning started dumping the puck in way more than they like to as a countermeasure to that. So that would be something. Buffalo is as talented a team as there is in the NHL in terms of their transition game and how they carry the puck, but they better be careful not to turn it over, especially to a guy like Lane Hudson.
Number one team in the NHL since December 9th, and the Habs aren't far behind Buffalo in that regard. Of course, we've got our coverage wrapping around all the games moving forward right here on MSG and on the Sabres social, which of course includes X and Facebook and YouTube. So we'll have pregame coverage tonight starting half an hour prior, so that's 6:30 on MSG. It's Buick and GMC game nights, of course, and we'll have the Lexus postgame report after. So an awful lot to look forward to as far as the matchup here, which we saw during the regular season, split two wins apiece, and historically, I mean, but
it was a mini-series in January, right?
Yeah, like the three-gamer.
Games in two and a half weeks. Yep. That was like, we got to see what that could be like, the back and forth. I'll say this, like, our Twitter poll is the key to success for the Sabres, and there's goaltending, special teams, defensive structures. You mentioned others. I think the biggest thing for me is winning the off the rush battles, because the Sabres and the Canadiens are really good rush teams.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to open more for Caulfield and Suzuki. Tampa was not trying to play a rush game against the Canadiens, and it completely suffocated Suzuki and Caulfield. I think this is going to be different. Buffalo has to win the rush battle. And you look in this season, Sabres were second in goals off the rush. Montreal was ninth. Both teams are in the top 10. That's how they fill the offense. That's what I would say, winning the off-the-rush battle.
I think it's crazy, statistically, how close these two are over small and large sample sizes. And it's kind of felt this way for a few years. Now, Montreal has had the upper hand over the last 4 years in regular season play, for whatever that's worth. The only reason I would look at it is simply because they're well aware of the clutch ability of Caulfield, Suzuki, and Slavkovsky. They've seen it enough head-to-head in the regular season play. Conversely, Thompson has had a lot of great nights, and Tuck has followed as well. So it's almost inevitable that these two are finally meeting. Montreal, of course, got there last year, but I think there's been a steady progression to a certain extent for both, which is nice to be able to wrap our arms around history like 1998, but also present day today.
Yeah, and Duffer, changing of the guard. I asked Lindy Ruff about it this morning, actually, that you know, these two franchises, you know, this is the first time since 2019 that you don't have one of the two Florida teams in the second round in the Atlantic. And, you know, these are not just two of the youngest teams in the league. They're two of the most entertaining teams to watch. Yeah. Like, aesthetically, this could be such a pleasing series to watch. And the series I just covered, Tampa-Montreal, was incredible to cover. I mean, as close a series as I've ever covered in my career, but it wasn't always aesthetically pleasing. I mean, Tampa really tried to minimize Montreal's strength, and they're such a smart team, the Lightning. That's going to be fascinating to me in this series, is that Suzuki's line just came off a series where they got absolutely shut down. 1 5-on-5 goal for Montreal's big line in 7 games. Anthony Cirelli, if there was any doubt of his two-way ability in the National Hockey League, that was an absolute clinic by Anthony Cirelli. The Sabres don't really have a player like Anthony Cirelli, except that the Sabres are more explosive offensively. So what's going to be interesting to me is, with Lindy Ruff, do you just go mano-a-mano offense on offense with your top lines, or do you tinker? And I asked you that off air, because that's Cirelli option. I know Ryan McLeod's a good defensive player, but Anthony Cirelli is a great player.
Yeah. So Suzuki, Cirelli, and Nelson have just been named the finalists for the Selke.
There you go.
And I am so mad. I'm so mad at myself because yesterday when we were,
he was on my sixth, seventh, he was on my ballot.
And right before I crossed him off, I'm like, ah, that's not going to go. And then, so sure enough, because, and again, it's hard. It's a, not to go too much of a sidebar here, but it is hard to focus on players like Nelson from good teams. Because at the end of the day, what negates another team? Nathan MacKinnon.
Kale McCarr.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, but, so but they Nelson, are equally as great at creating goal differential and chance differential and all that. So it can be sometimes challenging to get in the weeds and see who is the real star of it from a defensive standpoint, especially when Brock Nelson had another big offensive year.
There's no question, Duffer. And when I studied before I did my ballot for the Selke, and all three of those guys are among my five votes, Colorado was the stingiest team in the league. A lot of why you just mentioned why. But, you know, I talked to people in the Avalanche organization, and, you know, you see it in the numbers, but Nelson and Nichushkin had a lot of the hard five-on-five matchup minutes. They were handling the other team's most dangerous players, and so he basically pick between Nelson and Chushka. I want one of those two guys in my ballot. Nelson's the center. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was a tiebreaker for me. So I'm happy for Brock Nelson. I think he really deserves it. He played that role this year. Suzuki and Cirelli, they just faced off against each other. I mean, it's...
well, Suzuki had a fantastic year. 101 points.
Always playing against the top guys.
And I think that often that line was everything that Montreal had, defensively and offensively. When you look at the defense for the Montreal Canadiens, so you've got Mike Madison. You've got Caden Gooley, you got Alex Carrier, you got Noah Dobson, and sometimes Lane Hudson doesn't even really play as a top four. Like he does because they'll give him power play time and the minutes, but he's not going to be there late in the game sometimes. But did you see a different Lane Hudson in the first round, being able to handle what he handled from Tampa, and how can the Sabres get to him? Because you got to slow him down. He's a big part of their offense.
I thought Lane Hudson was the best of the young players of Montreal Canadiens in the opening round. I think he handled that series better than Slafkovský, than Caulfield. Tampa tried so hard with their effective forecheck to get him off his game, and he came out of the corner almost every time with the puck. I mean, he had an unbelievable series. I think a lot of people in the Tampa organization had a lot of respect for the way Lane Hudson played that series. So he's... And he played a ton of minutes. I mean, Marty St. Louis tried to get him out there in all kinds of different situations. Really, Carey is a guy that, with Dobson back, gets pushed down a bit now. And listen, the fact that they won a series in which they only got Noah Dobson back for Game 7 is pretty surprising to me. I actually thought that's why Tampa was going to win that series, is that Noah Dobson is really irreplaceable in terms of his minutes for Montreal. And they somehow found a way.
If you're doing like the old school tail of the tape and extensive checklists on either side here, I mean, how do you view the defense corps now that Dobson is healthy and Buffalo was one of the highest scoring defense units, but it's more than just scoring, obviously.
Yeah, I think Buffalo's top four is the best in the NHL. So I would give them the edge. But again, what I've seen with the Canadiens really since about mid-March, they had a road trip in California where they couldn't defend. I don't know if you remember that road trip. It was an absolute gong show. And ever since that moment,
San Jose was at like a 6-5.
Yeah,
game,
and Anaheim.
Yep.
But since that moment on, if you look at their metrics, the Canadiens have cleaned up defensively unbelievably well. And in that Tampa series, you keep trying to, in your head, how did they beat the Lightning? They gave nothing. They gave so little to the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, everyone's criticizing Point and Kucherov. Well, the other team gets a vote. The other team has a say in it, and they gave the suppression of grade A's in that series for Montreal 5-on-5 was unreal.
Some would say the MVP for the Canadiens the first round was Dobesh in net. I think at the end of Game 5, he was fantastic, and Game 7, he was fantastic. Is he one that maybe Sabres fans are going to realize, oh, they got Dobesh, and he's a rookie, and they got Fowler, and they're going to get good goaltending again for many years? Do you think the edge is on Dobesh's side against Lyon or Luukkonen, or is it pretty even?
So the way I look at it is that regardless of who's in net for Buffalo, here's what I would say about both these teams. One team beat Jeremy Swayman, the other team beat Andrei Vasilevskiy. So to me, that kind of evens out, I think, in this series. We just saw these guys beat the best of the best in the opening round. So it's hard to find an edge. Dobes was unreal. And I tell you, he gave up, I thought, a weak goal. I know you're the goalie fraternity guy. I didn't like the goal he gave up. I forget which Hagel. Game it was to Hagel.
Game...
I think it was game three. But what was revealing about it was that the rest of that night, he was quite steady. He was kind of unflappable about it. And the other thing that Tampa did, I don't know if you guys could tell from watching on TV, although your series and the series I was covering were on the same nights, but the Tampa players kept trying to skate behind his crease or near him and during whistles, trying to get under his skin. And it did to some degree, but didn't affect his performance. So that's the other. He's a very emotional goalie.
Dobes is 3-0 lifetime against Buffalo, including 2-0 this regular season. So that works presumably to his favor, but your point about the goaltending and who got eliminated in the first round is what makes it fascinating across the league, because it's really hard to put a dollar figure on the individual that you want in the crease and what that dollar figure should be within your cap world. And I mean, we just saw Shesterkin become the highest paid goaltender and the Rangers missed the playoffs, and it wasn't Shesterkin's fault, right?
Yeah.
And Hellebuck's the reigning MVP and a gold medalist, and he's not in the playoffs. And
Sorokin didn't make it.
And there's so much to like, and we mentioned Hellebuck. I mean, I gained more respect for him with his exit interview in Winnipeg, right? Like, and you have to put a value on that as well. Like, if you see a goaltender as a leader and you need that leadership on your team, by all means, extend, put more money there. But I think there's a lot of teams that are proving it doesn't have to be that way.
I mean, Dan Vladar going from backup to Calgary to hero in Philadelphia. I said this off air, but in my conversations with management across the league, all 32 teams, I've never heard less confidence or more confusion about cap allocation dollars to the position. No, I'm serious. Like, there's a real, Carolina is pretty outspoken about it. They don't believe in spending on goaltending in Carolina.
Incredible.
And Freddie Anderson is 6-0, and his save percentage is .955.
And Bussy rewrote the record book coming off the waiver wire.
Yeah. So,
right? Like,
at the end of the day, I still, in my heart, feel that if you could get Shesterkin or Vasilevsky or Swayman, Ottinger, you'd feel better, but it's not proven out every year.
The edge for both of you is in goaltending in the series,
because I think that it is Dobes,
okay,
the whole way. And Buffalo, we could see Luukkonen at some point. I'm going to give the edge, small edge on Montreal because of
very
the way
slight.
But everybody
slight.
Says the defense is slightly in Buffalo's favor because of the top four.
So
the forwards is what. And then we're going to do coaching.
So Sabres have more balance for my money.
Yes.
The revealing thing of the first round is that the Habs beat the team that everyone picked to come out of the East without getting offense from their top line.
Right.
That was new for Montreal to get depth scoring, Kirby Dach especially.
Yeah.
So I still give the edge to Buffalo up front.
I'm going to say this. I think that Montreal has big-time game changer in Caulfield and Suzuki and Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
But the depth at forward is on the Sabres side, and that is going to be a big difference in this series. And I do like the top four, like you said, of Buffalo. I think one of the best in the league. But Montreal has that game changer in Lane Hudson. That could definitely be the guy.
So, he was a nightmare for Tampa to account for. They really struggled. He had 10 shot attempts in the first two games of that series. And I give an edge to Montreal on special teams, which isn't hard to do right now when you look at the two power plays.
Which is interesting because of power play for sure, but Buffalo's had a very good penalty kill season and actually had an uptick in it in the playoffs against a Boston team that, it clearly didn't generate as much as they would want.
So coaching is going to be interesting.
So coaching is interesting only because depending on how much you want to read about the game and people's opinions, many don't know how important it is because the coaching carousel runs so fast now in this sport. And look at Vegas with their late season change and how it seemingly has worked once again with John Tortorella. But Lindy's got all this experience, and yet Marty St. Louis is in the postseason for a second straight year, where Buffalo hasn't been there since 2011. How do you view it, and how much stock do you put in it?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts. I won't go too long. But first
you gotta
of all,
read the article.
First of all,
you gotta read the article if you
no,
want.
No, I mean, listen. First of all, with Lindy Ruff, I think it's kind of funny that he got shown the door in New Jersey in a very respectful way, but he got shown the door essentially because the Devils said, we need someone else to bring our group to the next level. It's time for the Devils to be contenders, so we need we're going to replace him with Sheldon Keefe. Meanwhile, that's what Lindy's done here. He's brought the Sabres into it. I'm just saying, it's funny, the eye of the beholder sometimes. And
yes.
Like, he was thought of in New Jersey as a great teacher, but now it was time for the, you know. And in terms of Marty St. Louis, I was fascinated to see how he was going to handle the series against John Cooper, a guy that he knows very well. He played for John Cooper in Tampa, albeit briefly. John Cooper's regarded as the best coach in the NHL. I think we can all agree with that, that, you know, the perception. Early on, John Cooper did a lot of different things in that series where Marty St. Louis then chased the matchup early in that series. And once Tampa tied that series 2-2, where Cooper had done all these different things and jumbled up his top six, the rest of the series, Marty St. Louis got out of his comfort zone and completely redid his lines, and often in game, like a lot of different combinations to match what Cooper was doing. And he was right there, move for move, right to the end. So that was a big growth series.
I agree with that. And I think that Marty St. Louis is showing me something I hadn't seen in him as a coach. It was all about, you know, we're going to work on development and skills, and we're going to be a fun team, and we're going to keep the lines together and give the runner a chance. Like Gerby Doc, we're going to give you a chance. And Texier, we're going to give you a chance. And Bolduc, and he brought back Gallagher. But he did some things, and especially in Game 7, that I was like, oh, he's coaching now.
Oh, yeah,
big time. And that was a big thing. And Lindy Ruff has done that, too.
Right, and it doesn't always translate, right? Like, Cooper clearly rode some horses that would not have been expected in Game 7, and it had them in a position to win, and it didn't turn out.
Yeah.
And we, to your point about changing the lines, and especially in-game, Lindy has shown nothing but loyalty to so many of the lines that he has trusted since December 9th, right? And you wonder, in those challenging deep...
Why wouldn't you?
Like, why don't you change here? Because you're clearly not breaking through against Boston in the first couple of games, save for 6 minutes in the late part of the third period and all that. So it's a fascinating dynamic. And I just don't know whether you've ever been able to unlock just how to measure the coach's impact in all of this.
I think it's a hard thing to put your finger on, because also we tend to, I'll just speak for myself, we tend to forget how the assistants have a role in all this too, and the video work they put in and how they impact the head coach's final decision. Mm-hmm. So the staffs are important, not just the head coach. But there's a funny moment in the Tampa-Montreal series where people weren't sure Brent Gallagher was going to dress in that series.
Yeah.
He had lost his job late in the season. And
they dressed him the last game of the year as a token of you go ahead.
So they dress him for a pivotal game 5 in Tampa, and he scores on his first shift. Yes. And Marty Sandwich's like, I did not know that was going to happen. that's the coach's trick.
But again, like Marty Sandwich.
But it was no different here when Sam Carrick got acquired.
Absolutely.
He wasn't supposed to score. Man. He comes in and scores 5 times.
Has he been a good fit or what? He's
close.
Okay, he's close, and it could be a possibility tonight. Unlikely for me that we see Sam Carrick, because you know what? Tyson Kosak has done well between Greenway and Malenstein. And we'll see what the penalty kill does against Montreal, because I think Sam Carrick is going to be a big part of the penalty kill as well moving forward. But the fact that he's available and maybe ready to go, that's going to be another maybe checkmark to the Sabres when you look at the depth. Because if you run McLeod's line against Evans, who is now playing second line center with Newhook and Demidov,
we'll see.
Yeah. Okay, the insider here.
No. It's not that. It's that's the line, because Kapanen ended up being healthy scratch.
Yes.
That line has seen a few looks, is what I'm saying.
But if McLeod has that matchup, and then you have Norris who plays against Deneau potentially, and then if you bring back Carrick or even Kosak goes against Kirby Dach, I feel like the bottom three lines could be an advantage for Buffalo in a big way. That's where the game is going to be played, to me anyway. I think that's where you got to look.
You want to steer them into old tweets?
Oh, yes. This is a fun segment we have here. And it's called Old Tweets. It was called Twitter before X. And you joined Twitter in March of 2010.
Oh, my gosh.
So March of 2010.
What are you doing to me here?
Leading up to the trade deadline, you're like, I got to get on that Twitter machine. Here's a tweet.
Right after the Olympics in Vancouver.
Here's a tweet. Just heard from Marty Biron sitting by his phone.
That what was that on about? March 3rd, 2010. Oh, you got traded that day, right?
No, I was in Long Island, actually, with the Islanders, hoping to get traded. I had gone in, talked to Gart Snow a couple of times.
And I hope I had your permission to share that. I'm sure I did.
You know what? You and Larry Brooks, unfortunately, you know, passed away this year. But yeah. I told Brooksy and guys like you, if it sounds like something I would say, you can use a quote from me. Like, you could always do it.
I don't remember. Did you move?
I didn't move.
Oh.
Because Gart Snow was like, it's either going to be you or Dwayne Rollison. And then he was like, I don't want to move either one of you.
16 years ago.
16 years ago, March of 2010. That was one of your first tweets. It was about you heard from me.
There you go.
How good is that?
We also like to do spontaneous trivia, so I'm going to hit you both. Well, it's more you, Pierre. Buffalo against Montreal. Who do you think, which goaltender do you think has the best save percentage against Montreal?
In the goalies that are on the roster right now?
No. Goalies that have played minimum four games for the Sabres against Montreal.
Okay, well, obviously Dominic Hasek.
Hasek is one.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. Is Darren Pupa too? Marty Baron.
Marty Baron, number two.
My career.
You didn't even know.
I didn't know. I was going to say Ryan
Miller. Where's Pupa on that list?
It was a weird save percentage era, right? So his save percentage is farther down. Okay. Because him and Waugh had that battle around 1990, I was actually expecting him to be higher
as well.
Me too,
that's why I said that.
But the list is Dom at 934, Biron at 928.
Hey!
The hot dogs were good.
I'm still going to continue lobbying for the small Craig Anderson banner in our arena because Anderson was 926. Anderson did nothing but beat division rivals. He owned the Leafs and he owned
the
Canadiens.
Amazing.
Yeah. Jonas Enroth at number four at 925, and he was so good in shootouts. And Ryan Miller at number five. It's a great top
five. Ryan.
So,
I had amazing success against the Montreal Canadiens early in my career.
12-6 as a Sabre against
Montreal.
Amazing
success.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Especially in Montreal. And then I beat them in five games in the playoffs with the Flyers in 08.
Yes.
And then after that, I don't think I beat them again. It was a nosedive from that point on. Literally, maybe
it's how you start.
That was a great trivia question.
Thank you. It's what we do on a regular basis. Stop by anytime, please. Thank you.
Great to be on.
Amazing to see Pierre LeBrun.
By the way, I'm so excited for this series, for how aesthetically pleasing we might have in terms of the hockey. Honest to goodness.
Honestly, though, good people. Like I love hearing from Lindy and Marty as coaches in a setting like this because I love how they share their insight, but also their enthusiasm for a lot of things, and it's not stoic and it's not forced, and it's going to be a great one. And it starts tonight, of course, and we have another huge 50-50 we would expect tonight, presented by Northtown Automotive. Guaranteed jackpot $150,000. You can scan the QR code on the screen right now here on MSG, or go to sabres.com/50-50, and looking forward to a big number there, and who knows how many on the scoreboard tonight. Our thanks to Pierre LeBrun for joining us. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Get back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
All right, rolling along here on a game day. It is a super game day. It's game one of round two as Buffalo and Montreal battle tonight, which means opportunity for you to indulge in the game in many different ways. Saberhood Block Party presented by Northtown Automotive. And, yeah, we're running it back like we did in the first round. So games one and two, be down in the party in the plaza starting at 4, Canalside Watch Party Zone at 5. You, of course, can go to sabres.com/playoffs. for more details and to RSVP today. Because, of course, you want to do that. You want to let people know where you're going to be and get in on this one, which is game five of the regular of the season, pardon me, between these two. The regular season presented four times and two wins apiece for each. And the more I dove into regular season numbers, less so playoffs here, obviously Montreal was in a unique position in a series against Tampa where almost 99% of the minutes in that series were a one-goal game.
Yeah.
Like
I think Montreal took a 2-0 lead. They actually lost that game. That's the only time that a team went up by two goals.
So in that sense, seven-gamer, so tight. The numbers for the Habs are a little different, a little lower scoring here than what Buffalo was able to produce against Boston. But
no empty netters for winner in that
series.
No,
but thankfully Buffalo had a couple, which allowed them to get past Boston. And you'll be happy to know that amidst some of the birthday wishes I've been getting today, one from our buddy Oz was, hey, hope they get a couple of empty netters for you tonight.
Absolutely. That would be you can't get a shootout. There's no shootout in the playoffs. The next best thing for you as a birthday present is an empty net goal.
Let's dive in a little bit more on the matchup. And there's a lot of details we can get into, of course, and then around the NHL. But did want to hear from Slavkovsky on Montreal's side here. Yes. And again, it's been a little while since these two met, having had the three in a, two and a half week window, I guess, in the month of January. Let's hear from Slavkovsky and just, a little bit of insight on the Sabres.
I feel as though the matchup against Buffalo, though, will provide different opportunities in the first round for you guys offensively?
I would say so, yeah. I feel like there is more risk in their game. And I feel like we can use that to our advantage, you know. We can do all these counterattacks and just... I feel like it's going to be a good hockey. Honestly, I'm excited for tomorrow.
He's excited. Everyone's excited. Do you believe that they believe that because of how Buffalo plays, there is opportunity, more so than what they just witnessed against Tampa?
I think he is right in the comments. Although, I think you got to be careful what you wish for, because if you start playing the rush game, again, the Buffalo Sabres have incredible rush attacks. So if they try to bring their defense and Lane Hudson and Gouley and Dobson off the rush, it can turn around and go the other way. The same way the Sabres have to be careful when they bring Dahlin and Byram and Power, Samuelson and everybody off the rush. You got to be careful. I pulled the numbers this season, in the regular season, the chances off the rush. The Sabres were 7th in chances created off the rush and 2nd in goals. The Canadiens 15th in chances, 9th in goals. That's great. Now, on the flip side, the Sabres were 12th in goals against off the rush. Pretty good. Where the Canadiens were 4th. Like, they were really good defending off the rush. Although they gave up the third most chances off the rush, they just didn't give up goals. And that's the big difference. They were 30th in chances off the rush, but only 4th in goals. I think this is where, you know, maybe you got to be careful if you're Buffalo, because the Canadiens don't give up a lot of goals off the rush, but they do give up a ton of chances.
Yeah, the balance here that, you know, was evident for Buffalo in the regular season, and as Pierre just talked about it in the playoffs for Montreal, makes it incredibly interesting. We're talking about the 4th overall Buffalo Sabres and the 6th overall Montreal Canadiens. Yep. And wedged in between was Tampa. But there was only 3 points, right, between the three teams. And on and on and on, the closeness statistically of these two teams. And you know what? It wasn't – we led the show with the Jeff Sanderson OT winner
in
game one, another legendary RJ call. There wasn't much to choose from between those two teams back in 1998 either, and yet Buffalo somehow emerged with a sweep. And in the three series that Buffalo has defeated Montreal over the course of time, the first was a six-gamer back in 75, but then it was a three-game sweep, which for me might have been one of my – most impressionable times as a young person. Bob Solvay went into the Forum and posted shutouts in consecutive games.
Yep.
And then they came back home and won it in a best of five, three game sweep. But we're so far removed from that. But of course, historically, these two have always been linked. It's like, there's always been a French connection, right?
And because it's Montreal. There's a funny thing happening, though, Duffer.
Yeah.
Because you talk about the Adams division back then. The Adams division in the 80s was Buffalo, Boston, Montreal, Hartford, and Quebec City.
Yep.
Okay, so Buffalo played Boston in the first round. They're playing Montreal right now.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the Hartford Whalers? The Carolina Hurricanes? Who knows the Quebec Nordiques? It's Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
There could be a path for the Buffalo Sabres to win a cup playing all four teams from the Adams division they were in the 80s. Couldn't that be unbelievable?
Well, sure. And then, you know, as Montreal witnessed, because when they came in mid-January, it was reunion night, and that was the acknowledgement and quote-unquote celebration of the incredibly fun, offensive, talented year of the 05-06 team that, of course, met Carolina in the conference final. And then it started a month before, obviously, reunion night, when the Sabres turned the season around.
Yes.
But since then, there have just been so many similarities to 05-06. And now that, you know, you paint it that clearly again, what lays ahead here potentially for this team. But you can't get beyond game one tonight, obviously.
Yeah, but 98, you mentioned, like, there wasn't a lot to pick. There was a couple of things. Number one, like Matthew Barnaby, hat-trick on Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. We're going to get a game on Mother's Day this Sunday. So that's the one thing. And two, it was the first time ever the Canadians were swept on home ice in a best of seven series. Mm-hmm. There could be an opportunity. And the Sabres, and I don't think it's going to be a sweep. I think it's going to be a long series. But I'm just saying, the way that Buffalo had home ice advantage in 98, Buffalo has home ice advantage in 2026. There's definitely some similarities in that matchup again in the way that it's building up to be.
Yeah, and again, just the key pieces. The fact that, you know, most of them have been here for a few years with each team. We started, obviously, the Buffalo-Boston series with Pasternak on one side, Thompson on the other, and both rose up to the occasion very early on and then throughout. I mean, even Thompson with a two-assist game to clinch it in Game 6. And it feels that same way. It may seem like low-hanging fruit, but it's just fascinating to me when you have players living up to their billing and then what it does once the puck actually drops, especially as Pierre documented how little production Montreal got from their top line, but still were able to win in 7 against Tampa. Now, we want to get
around. I want to get Luke Tuck on the show, because he is in the Montreal organization in Laval. And, I mean, he's not with the big club. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I would think that Mama Tuck and Daddy Tuck are going to cheer for Alex, because Luke is not there. But it's, you know, for Alex, it's kind of like, hey, you know what? There's a rivalry building between Alex Tuck and the Sabres and the Canadians.
Yes, and obviously, you know, that Laval series that you speak of is now a 2-2 series right now.
And there's a big game with 5 coming up with the Marlins. Yeah.
All right,
Laval was able to cross one more off their board.
Yeah, I finally, after losing the last two. Yeah. Around the National, real quick from last night, let's get into Colorado and Minnesota. You expected, what was it, 7 goals, and you got it?
So the over-under was 6.5, and I was surprised that the under was favored yesterday. I ended up getting the over. Well, I didn't bet it, but I was saying, I said on the show yesterday it's going to be the over. With a empty net goal with 4 seconds left by Nichushkin, who just flipped it up in the air trying to kill the clock. Uh-huh. But this game started quick. 3 minutes in, Colorado scores. 6 seconds later, 7 seconds later, Minnesota scores. It's 1-1. You're like, oh boy, there's going to be 15 goals again in this game. It wasn't. It was 2-1 for a long time. Colorado kind of pushed. Minnesota went with Gustafson in net. I was surprised of the decision. He gave up a really tough first goal to Marty Natchez on the back end. He gave up a tough third goal that on entry. So I thought he had a couple of goals where don't love it. I think they'll go to Wallstead in the next game for sure. But yeah, a 5-2 win. Minnesota's fighting, though. They came back. They made it, you know, 4-2, and they were hoping with the goalie pulled late. But Colorado is a machine right now.
Are they the best team?
They are the best team, in my opinion. Look, it feels like everybody in Colorado is joining the party. It's not just McKinnon, and it's not just McCarr. Is everybody getting involved? Yesterday at the postgame press conference, McKinnon kept glorifying Landeskog, and Landeskog had to say, enough now. Like, enough. As he would. Like, you know, I'm a humble guy, but it was like, man, like they are a really, really good team right now. The best in the NHL at this moment.
Yeah, and Carolina obviously not far behind, but there are 8 teams remaining. Sabres and Habs kick off their series tonight. And, of course, the draft lottery went last night. Draft coming up in Buffalo in June, and Toronto wins. But San Jose also had a win out of that as well, right?
They were the biggest mover. I get that Toronto went from 5-1 and potentially picking up Gavin McKenna. But San Jose went from 9th to 2nd.
Yeah.
jumping ahead of Vancouver, who dropped to third. And yes, I mean, the Vancouver Canucks were hoping to get the number one pick, or at least the number two pick. They end up with number three, the worst case scenario for the Vancouver Canucks, having been the worst team in the NHL. But San Jose, this is going to be 3 years in a row they pick in the top two, and 4 years in a row they pick in the top five. It's not a good place to be, but they're on the way up. They they won a lottery spot to get to second.
Right, that's the thing. When you get the bonus of being an improving club, and they improved more than anyone last year, 34 points, and you still end up with a top three pick, that's a win organizationally for Mike Greer, obviously. And what they could use moving forward is a Norris Trophy caliber defenseman.
And there's a Swedish one.
Who are your finalists for this year's Norris? It'll be announced tomorrow, by
the way. It will be announced tomorrow, by the way. For me, it would be Zach Werenski, it would be Kale McCarr, and it would be, I'm going to say, Rasmus Dahlin. That would be my top three. There's a lot of defensemen you can pick. I think Werenski ends up winning it, despite the fact that Columbus did not make the playoffs, but he was fantastic for that team at both ends of the ice. So I think that Werenski wins it, but I would put McCarr and Dahlin in the top three.
Yeah, I think it's going to be real close on the vote between Quinn Hughes and Dahlin as to see who that other finalist is beyond McCarr and Werenski. From the D to the Ds.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
Okay, this was hilarious last night. Not for the linesman in question here, as Parker Kelly throws it right. But then wait. It's like, okay, everything's calmed down. Linesman's fine. Boom! And it's not.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Not even that hard of a punch on Matt Boldy, but Kelly pops him with the left. Boldy goes down like the proverbial sack of potatoes, and I laughed out loud in that moment. It was so ridiculous. I don't know whether it's dazzling or disturbed, but it was funny.
It was funny. Poor Matt Boldy, who had a tough night. He got hurt in the corner late in the game.
Crushed him.
Absolutely buried him. And then the puck was in the Minnesota zone, and Boldy had to get up and then race to the blue line to stay onside. I don't know if it was onside or not, but he got absolutely rocked in the corner late in the game. So I like that. I like that physical play by a guy like McKinnon, who is a big dog. They call him the Nate Dog, and he had dog in him. But then Boldy having to return and then dive at the line to slide to stay onside was pretty special, too.
Yeah, you're just trying to stay in the moment and also show that you're still okay despite taking significant impact there from McKinnon. But it was an unproductive opening two games for Minnesota in Colorado. But as we've seen, that division, the top three, so close this year, Minnesota could very well right the ship on home ice. We want you obviously in and around the arena tonight, soaking in game one. But tomorrow, we have another drive-through rally presented by Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center. And you can be there at Topps Friendly Markets on Orchard Park Road in West Seneca from 4 to 6 to pick up your street sign, see Sabretooth, and more. Obviously, go to sabres.com/playoffs for more details on this, birthdays, anniversaries, and more coming up.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
If you didn't know, now you will. Buffalo Pro Shop, the brand new online store of the Sabres and, of course, the Buffalo Bandits. You can visit BuffaloProShop.com now to shop exciting team gear and unique styles. And, of course, we're fired up for Game 1 tonight. That's why we led in with our Twitter poll at Sabres Live today, discussing Buffalo, Montreal. Regular season play was tight. What's the key to success against the Canadiens in this one?
Right now, staying out of the box is winning at 42% because Montreal's got a good power play, but the Sabres' penalty kill is good. Some of the other replies that we've gotten, just play your game, getting the power play going, depth scoring, I think that is, to me, going to be the big difference between the depth forwards of the Canadiens and the Sabres. So this is kind of like what we're getting right now. Staying healthy is another one here for the Sabres. Can't afford injuries.
Birthday number four for me was huge. Craig Ramsey scored the game-tying goal late. This was in 1975. And remember how great the Habs were in the 70s. But this was Buffalo's first series win against Montreal. Ramsey scores the tying goal with 5:25 to go in the third. And at the same time, I was probably just getting into hockey and using the the exact same helmet as Craig Ramsey.
Oh, yeah.
And then Rene Robert.
We all did.
Talk about embarrassing moments. Then Rene Robert scores in overtime to help the Sabres defeat the Habs 5-4. What a series.
What a series. It was awesome. A couple of quick updates to the Montreal Canadiens. They had an optional skate this morning. Brendan Gallagher and Jaden Struble were on the ice with Kapanen, Laine, Fowler, and Montembeau, which means that Jacky and Valeno were not at the skate. There's a chance we could see Arbor Jacky and Joe Valeno in the lineup tonight if, you know, but also, there's always games to be played by the coaches as to who's skating and who's not skating.
You think there'll be any changes for Buffalo?
I don't think there'll be any changes for Buffalo, but I would anticipate Montreal starting with a different look. Valeno's been itching to get in. He's a good penalty killer, and Jacky brings some toughness to the back end.
Can you name, I believe, the one skater in this game tonight that actually has a playoff goal against the opponent?
Wow. No, I can't.
Logan Stanley. And he has two of them.
Wow.
Incredible, right? See you tonight at 6:30 for our pregame coverage of Game 1.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out. Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.